Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, Pop Life Podcast. Today is September 6th? No, 5.
Nah, you was right there, man.
5?
Yeah.
5, right? Summer's dead. Done. Weather's changed in New York, like right on, like,
But it's been a good change. Usually it's a lot harsher.
Yeah.
This one has been a little more subtle. So, like, you get them early morning chill.
Yeah.
And you get the late night breeze.
Yeah, but the day is all right.
Yeah, the day has been decent. They've been comfortable.
Yeah, it was warm. It's actually pretty warm yesterday. But today is back to more like fallish type weather. How you doing, Nye?
I'm good.
You back from your trip?
I'm back from my trip.
From Mexico.
Trying to get, you know, into the swing of things for September.
Did you drink a lot of tequila?
No, I didn't really drink a lot at all.
You had some tacos?
I think I had a taco.
Just
I was chilling. Like, I didn't, I went for the sun and the water.
You were just low key.
I left the resort one time.
That's fine. Like, I'm not a big leave the resort type of nigga either. Like, where am I going?
This on vacation.
Yeah, I'm on vacation. Maybe once to dinner or something.
Right.
But like,
and my resort had 24-hour room service.
So, really, where am I going?
So I wasn't.
Yeah, I am never.
I wasn't even leaving the room, like, to be honest. Because I was way on the other side from the restaurants and stuff. I was like, I'm going to order this burger.
Yeah, and I'm going to chill.
We went on a vacation one time, and we had the pool with our room.
Also, nigga, we literally
did not leave.
Why?
For no
reason. Right,
24-hour room service.
Where I'm going.
Yeah, liquor was stacked.
Yes, I'm straight. I wanted to give a quick shout out to, we're going to keep the shout out short though, but I want to give a quick shout out to Naomi Osaka and Coco Graf. Graf, right? Who had an epic tennis match at this year's U.S. Open, but really was more, the tennis match was great, but what really struck people was their sportsmanship. Well, Naomi's sportsmanship to Coco. Not that Coco was being bad, but she lost, so she was emotional. And Naomi kind of reaching out to her and kind of showing her love was kind of like a Black Girl Magic moment. And, you know, Naomi's just very graceful young girl. I think she's only like 20 years old or something.
Yeah, she's very young.
I don't even think she's 21. And Coco was like 15. They're like
the kids.
They're children, yeah.
Yes.
But they, you know, they revealed in the thing that I guess they had kind of known each other because Naomi said, like, you were the only other Black girl in the spot. So we had to kind of like, oh, there's the other black parents. And so they had kind of have a bit of a bond. I mean, they're rivals. They're trying to win now. They're not rolling over for each other. But there's definitely like a bit of a connection based on them just kind of being one of the few Black people in those circumstances. And it was a really nice you know, moment that they shared for the world to see, you know. Naomi ended up losing the next round, but she's been hurt. Serena's still playing, I think she's still playing, so I'm hoping Serena wins. But I just thought that was a really nice moment. Sean and I were talking about something earlier. I'm going to jump into some topics right away, which I thought was interesting, and it was kind of part of what I was going to talk about. So, I know neither one of you watch Queen Sugar, but... the season's been great. The episode last night was fucking great, right? So, I won't get into a lot of other stuff because you guys won't know what I'm talking about. But, one of the things that came up is the character Charlie, who is the... technically the half-sister of the other two brothers and sisters because she has a white mom and she was raised somewhere. It's like their father had an affair with this white woman and she had a child and she was raised somewhere. But Charlie used to come back and forth in the summers. So they have a bond. But it's different because Charlie grew up with more money, wealthy, went to private schools and blah, blah, blah. And then ended up marrying an NBA basketball player. So she's been a woman of wealth for a long time. She's actually a sports agent, and like, I think she might, does she have a law degree? She might, remember. But she's, you know, she's dope. Yeah. Anyway, So her son on the show, his name is Micah. He's graduating high school this year. And so, and on the show, it's like the graduation's ready to come up, and they're all at this little family dinner, and Micah got in Harvard. And so he's there, Charlie's like, you know, I've been waiting, you know, been building up to this moment, and, you know, thank you to everybody in the room, you know, the family who kind of, you know, gathered around. Because what happened, just real briefly for those who don't know, is Charlie found out her husband was having an affair and moved to New Orleans, moved to Louisiana from L.A.
That was like the one episode I watched.
Yes. Yeah, so, like so, yes. So that's why they're there now, and they've, Micah's definitely basically like his whole high school life has been now raised with his black side, his black family, you know, in a small town. Right? Anyway, so she's like, thank you for pulling us all together and, you know, kind of like the village, you know, embracing us, embracing Micah to get to this moment. And you're going to Harvard and it's going to be amazing. And Micah stands up and he's like, Ma, I don't want to go to Harvard. I've rescinded my acceptance letter. Actually, I'm going to go to Xavier here in New Orleans. You know, I want to go to a black school. And Charlie, like, spazzes. Like, what are you talking about? And, of course, then the family is like, well, you know, Xavier's a good school. Because it is. It's like, most of the, their thing is black medicine.
Yeah, doctors.
The doctors and the nurses and RNs and pharmacists. That's kind of like an Xavier thing. Like, you go to that school to be some type of in the medical field. So anyway, he says he wants to go to Xavier, and then they have this whole kind of back and forth, kind of talking about the virtues of going to a black school versus the virtues of going to a white school. And Charlie's like, look, you could go to this white school, you know, to Harvard, and the connections that you'll make and the people that you'll meet. She says, it's not about the education in and of itself. It's about the network. And then you can take that network. And then when you graduate and come back into the world, now you have this vast network of people who are also, that come from, you know, money and power and influence and their families that are not, and you can come back and help your people. And then the other side to his argument was, yeah, but my people need me here. Like, I don't want to leave and go way up to Boston. Like, I want to be here, and I can do things in the community and as I've been doing. And I've been, because Charlie on the show is now running for like a city council thing or something. So he's like, I'm watching you on all the things you do for the community. And that's inspired me to want to stay. And also, I just want to be, you know, basically around black people doing black things. I've never seen that argument on television. Mm. Like, I've had that debate with people, but I've never seen that argument told. I just thought it was very interesting that they approached it and addressed it in that way. So Charlie wasn't really, like, saying black schools are shit. She was just saying, like, I think that going to Harvard is going to just give you a network of people that you'll be able to use for the rest of your life, which I thought was kind of like, yeah, but, like, black schools have networks, too, that people are able to use for the rest of their lives to do things. It happens. Look at all the black people in all different industries, on the top of the industries, Oprah, whatever, who went to black schools.
HBCU network is serious.
Exactly. So it was just a very interesting, you know, conversation. And I wanted to bring it up to you because obviously now you went to a PWI, but you have a huge black
Tuskegee. Yeah, I'm like the only person in my family who did.
Yeah, so you have a huge black HBCU network, all in your family and your friends and so on. Yeah. And then you're the parent of a child who just graduated from HBCU. Mm-hmm. And obviously I went to HBCU, so we have all kind of different perspectives on it. So I just kind of wanted to throw it out there because I just thought it was very interesting.
So I do want to say for one that's kind of on the subject, me and my friends, because my friend group from South Carolina, we're half split between HBCU and PWI. Okay. And we used to have, like, good-natured debates about it, but this HBCU versus PWI, like, fight that I see now, that started on Twitter, in my opinion, right?
And it gets pretty intense.
It gets really ugly.
It's
nasty.
Yeah,
it's really nasty, ugly. Yeah. So, in my case, my entire immediate family, both grandparents on both sides, my father's father went to Tuskegee, my father's grandmother was dean of women at Tuskegee, my father's mother went to Fisk, my father's sister went to Morgan, mm-hmm. my dad went to Howard, my mom's parents met at South Carolina State, my mom went to Howard, Cheyenne went to Howard, my stepdad went to Howard. Mr. Eric went to Howard. You know,
Mr. E. What's up, Mr. E?
I'm
up
right there.
So I and then on my grandfather's side, all his cousins went to Claflin.
Now, where's Claflin? I don't know that one.
It's in Orangeburg. It's next door to South Carolina State. It's a Methodist. It's a AME college.
Okay. Okay.
It's like Benedict.
Okay.
So I, actually, it's bigger than state now, actually. But, so I was only given, my parents, it's weird. My father adamantly did not want me to go to Howard because he said it was janky. My stepfather. My biological, and they lost my paperwork. So he was right. And he was like, see, this is the shit you'll have to deal with. All the time. My father very much wanted me to go to Howard.
Okay.
My mom really didn't care. She just wanted me to go away. I ended up staying in state. I ended up going to USC. USC wasn't even on my school list. The only reason I went to USC, I had to apply to the in-state school in order to qualify for some scholarship I was going for. And my boyfriend threatened to break up with me if I left.
Oh, yeah. I think you told us that story right. Before.
I love my college experience, but this is the dumbest shit I ever did. My mother told me. She's like, you're so stupid.
Yeah. For those out there, yeah. I mean, I don't know if anybody that young listens to us, right. but if parents, whatever, please don't let your children make a decision
based on
and not to, just hold on a second. That's very interesting you said that because Micah has a girlfriend, Kiki, they've been together on the show.
Oh, yeah, she's super black, right?
She's black as black, right? And really super dope and really super smart. And she's going to Tulane. So I was surprised that she wasn't going to an HBCU. So when Micah broke the news, Charlie looked at Kiki.
It was about the spaz.
Yeah. And Kiki was like, oh, whoa, it's the first time I heard about this.
Right.
Because like you said that thing of kids do that sometimes.
Because my boyfriend didn't go away to school at all. So it was bad enough for him that I was 2 hours down. Like, he went to ITT. So it was bad enough for him that I was, like, 2 hours down the road, let alone, like, the thought of me going
to D.C.
Or Spelman. Because Spelman was my first choice. Okay. So anyway, that said, my PWI experience is very unique because at the time I was at Carolina, black students were 20% of the population. We have more black students than South Carolina State.
So you had a lot. So of black, like, you had
a black HBCU college within. Inside of the university. If you went to the student center during certain times of day, you thought you were at a black college. So when I hear people talk about like their PWI experience, like not seeing another black student for days, and that just was not my experience.
Yeah.
I still had the blackness. Also, come from a super black family. So I feel like some people need the HBCU experience because you need that culture infusion. Y'all have met my family, black as fuck.
Yeah.
So I also didn't necessarily feel like I needed it. But that said, now many years down the road, when I look at like the FAMU crew, even everybody for some reason thinks I went to Howard. Like, I'm in a private Howard Facebook group. I don't know who put me in there. I don't know what. And I've never pretended. I've never said that. Yeah. But people just assume I'm an HBCU grad, which is fine. What I didn't get out of my school, I don't have the network because I left the region. There's not a lot of Carolina alum above the Mason-Dixon, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I also, when people say, like, my school made me who I am, and my school gave me this sense of pride, and I remember Dean such and such told me this, and Professor, I can't remember any of my professors' names. You know, so it's like, Dean such and such told me this, and Dr. blah, 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 remember he used to tell all of us this, and remember when Professor blah, 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 I don't have that.
That type
and
of stuff,
I don't have, there was nobody at Carolina who was, like, instilling life skills in the students. You know, it's a massive school. We were just out there fending for ourselves. So I look back on that, and I'm kind of like, yo, I wish I had that. Like, I'm not posting no pictures on Carolina's charter day. Like, I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? But people will, like, on Spelman's charter day or FAMU's charter, Howard's charter day, like, they really have so much love for their school.
Yeah.
I represent my school. You know, I'll go cheer for the football team, but I'm not, like, it's representing not, it like
well,
that.
Well, that's what I've noticed about a lot. To me, you know, I'm being general, I'm generalizing here, but I've noticed that most of the people over the years that I've met who went to the white PWI, I call them white schools, because I'm an old black man, but there's no connection after they leave.
Right.
Like, once they leave, it's done. Now they have a connection to maybe the people that they
but you don't have a connection
with,
to the
but you
school.
Don't go back to the school. Yeah. Like,
I
like
go
how
back
we have
for
homecoming.
Games.
And
I go back. No, we go to that.
Oh, because
no,
you have that big. Because
well,
you're
I went
an
to
SEC.
SEC school.
So you have
so we
big
go
games.
Back,
you got
yeah,
Alabama.
Go,
you got Florida.
Right.
You got. Yeah, you
and
got,
that
yeah.
probably is more about me going to an SEC school than anything. We absolutely
True.
Go back for homecoming.
True.
And that, I do want to say that's one misconception because I see a lot of people be like, y'all don't even know how to do homecoming. I'm like, what the fuck do you think? We have Black Alumni Association. You know what I mean? Like, we do. There are black organizations. organizations and black student organizations, we tailgate, we do all that same mm-hmm. shit. We may not circle up at Plots and, you know, do all of that, even though it's not like there aren't black Greek orgs on PWIs, but they're still like, we still go tailgate, you know.
Yeah. And so what do you, as a parent of a recent graduate, how do you look at it?
Well, I know that we had gone on a few visits, and, you know, the thing about it is that I spent an incredible amount of time with my son, being, you know, the primary caregiver, the stay-at-home dad or whatever. So I kind of knew some of the things he wanted to do and wanted to experience. Mm-hmm. And I also knew some of the things that he needed to do and he needed to experience.
Right.
So Justin had actually gone to private school for majority of his grade school years.
Okay.
And I did not, you know, great school, great people, did absolutely the best they can, was not an environment that I felt gave him a level of culture.
I got you.
Right.
And not because of their lack of effort. They really did try.
They tried, yeah.
They tried, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at a certain point, it's like he's in this school and there's literally like three people. There's like three or four black people. There's like two black, you know, female teachers, lady teachers, and the janitor.
It was
Earl. You know what I'm saying? So I said, you know what, this isn't quite right. So, we took him out, we put him in public school, and that was sort of a shift of him just sort of opening up his social bubble.
Right.
And I felt like that was necessary. So we went to a few schools. We did an entire Chicago run. We went to like Northwestern, University of Chicago, DePaul. So you got to see these sort of, like you said, even though these are like DePaul is a PWI school, but there's black as a motherfucker in there. Like
in Chicago,
you in Chicago, the city of Chicago. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of, you know, something that I can see. But there was, when he went to Howard's campus and when he went to Morehouse's campus, there was different
something lit up in
that,
him.
That boy's like that. Face. Yeah. First of all, there was a busload of girls from Chicago at Howard. He was ready to sign day.
When the first one was
right. Yeah, right now. But I could tell, and one of the things, and I always remember this, you know, Morehouse does an enormous amount of pomp and circumstance when you do this whole parent ceremony, drop them off. And I remember him saying when we left, he was like, I'm supposed to be here. Like, I feel
this
like
home. This
is, yeah, like I'm good. Right. You know, and he never wavered. He never buckled. It was never anything weird or anything like that. And I felt like he had, when I would talk to him, there was a, you know, he wasn't blackity black, y'all, but there was a level of cultural awareness that I felt like he was getting outside of just the house.
Right.
Yeah, because you start having them conversations in the dorms. You know what I'm saying? I remember so many of them conversations. I always tell people, one of the first things I really remember about going to Morgan was, you know, I grew up around black people. You all know I'm black as hell, right?
Right.
But I get down there and I'm like, oh,
there's different kinds of black people.
Yeah, we all black, but we ain't all the same at all.
Right.
I was like, okay, D.C. niggas is way different than Philly dudes.
Yeah.
And Philly dudes is way different, obviously, than like New York dudes or Baltimore dudes. Or my man from Dallas is like, you know, and then you start sharing stuff like, oh, yo, in Dallas, this is what we do. In Chicago, this is how. And you start like being like, oh, man, this is like all these kind of totally different cultural experiences amongst this, you know, big group of black people. Like I said, you start having new combos in late night in the dorm or in the yard, and you start meeting people and you start sharing stuff. So it's I can understand what you're saying about how Justin kind of like how it lit him up, you know?
Yeah.
And I get that. And I think to your point, some kids really do need that. Like, I have a friend who I went to high school with. She went to Howard. I felt like she needed to go to Howard. And even she told me, she was like, you may not have needed Howard, I needed Howard. Like, we went to high school together. We both grew up in the suburbs, but her family was much more like kind of bougie black.
Yeah.
And even though they were like a Jack and Jill family, they didn't really even do the Jack and Jill stuff, but she felt like she needed to immerse herself more in black culture. In my house, they were playing Fela. They were burning incense. My mama had nose rings. She had braces going halfway up her arm. You know, so it was different in my house. But again,
but again, it shows like your black home experience and this your friend's black home experiences are two different. But they're still black experiences, but they're just very different. And lastly,
like, that's my concern for Jordan, because she's hell bent on going to school in California,
and they don't really do black out there, bruh.
Right. What you think you gonna get out there?
Yeah.
Like, that's not necessarily at every campus, because she's been on campus. Like, we go visit Justin. She's gone to the Spelman campus and things like that. So there's, you know, she's soaking in all of that stuff, and I think she thinks that, oh, I'll just be at a bigger school, but I will have this sort of pocket of black people at this bigger school. And I'm like,
that's not necessarily the case.
The only school, I mean, I'm talking shit, the only school on the West Coast I know that has that bit of a pocket is Stanford.
A little bit, but it's a much smaller pocket, but they're very tight.
It's small and tight, but it ain't a lot of them. It's still Stanford.
It's still Stanford. Although the black Stanford students and black Stanford administration and staff really do look out for.
They're very close knit, but it's not a lot of them. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The one in Chicago now, right?
Yep.
But it's just not a lot of. Even my school, like I said, when I was at University of South Carolina, we were 20% of the population. That's because they had a program called Provisional Year where, if your grades weren't up to par, they gave you a year to pull your shit up. So a lot of my friends were in there because of provisional year. I mean, friends who went on to, like, get multiple degrees and be cool, but, like, they just needed
to get their shit together.
Year of adjustment. Yeah. They did away with the program, cut the black population in half.
Of course.
So now, like, it's a vastly different experience there. So I've realized that I'm fortunate and it's unique in the experience I had. Like, there were whole dorms that were basically, like, black. Like, you just went over there to play spades. You know what I mean? Like, that type of thing. But what I do think is unfortunate is that there are now these preconceived notions about what PWI people experience, students experience, what HBCU students experience. Like, if you think that HBU is somehow a lesser level of education or a lesser experience, you've never been around a bunch of HBCU. Like, go to Martha's Vineyard. All them motherfuckers are, you know what I mean? Like, all of them HBCU grads. It's all Spellhouse, everything. Yeah. Hampton,
lawyers,
Morehouse,
doctors, lawyers, doctors.
Going back 3-4 generations. Yeah. You know.
Like I said on the show, Xavier is like, they pump out doctors like it's going out of style. This is, you know, going to being a doctor anywhere is hard.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
no matter
what
you
do. And this is what they're known for. So, like, there's, like you said, it ain't, yeah, just because you went to, like, you know, black school doesn't mean that you skated through.
That you skated at all. And I still have access. I feel like I get to walk the line a little bit, because I'm Greek. So as a black Greek, you still have a level of access to, like, that kind of black exclusivity type of thing. Into certain networks. And like I said, also because just a family proximity.
Yeah.
Right? So I totally get it. And, you know, I don't rep Howard, although I'm proud of Howard because I'm a product of Howard in my own sense. But I do, as a PWI graduate, like, I was talking to another one of my friends about it. I was like, yo, I was talking about Lauren and, like, the FAMU crew. Like, I would love to be able to drop in anywhere and know that there's a network of folks who are willing to support. I don't do enough of that.
Speaking of which, I got your alumni hoodie in the truck.
Oh, shit.
Don't forget.
Thank you, brother. I don't really reach back on the mortgage shit as much as I should. Like, I need to do
better. But you went to homecoming and shit, right? Last year.
Two years ago.
Okay.
I didn't go last year, but I think I'm going to go this year. I'm going to try to start.
You're going to be at a whole lot of talent shows looking at nieces and nephews.
and that's one of the things.
I'm
like, oh, man, I don't need to be beating the head. Bro, I just want to eat some popcorn and enjoy it just like you. I don't want to tell no stories, bro.
Right.
I'm just here to enjoy it. But I just thought it was very interesting they brought that up on the show. Yeah. Real quick, well, RIP to LaShawn Daniels.
Yeah.
Those who don't know, he was a really prolific songwriter.
I was about to say the same thing, prolific, yeah.
He wrote the whole Full Moon album for Brandy. And I think that third album, too, but definitely that Yeah, the what was the third album? It was Full Moon.
Never Say Never.
Full Moon is third.
Right.
He wrote both of those for Brandy. He wrote Say My Name for Destiny's Child. Mm-hmm. He look, let's Google him. He wrote
Man Enough for Me. He did Love and War for Tamar. Yeah,
Man Enough for Me for Toni Braxton.
He's done a bunch of stuff. He's done some stuff for Ciara.
He's a beast.
He's had his hand in a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I remember reading his name on that Never Say Never album. I actually thought it was a girl.
Right.
It was LaShawn. I'm like, who's this girl Rodney got writing on these records? You know what I'm saying? And then I found out it was a dude. He's from St. Louis originally. Mm-hmm. I think he's a church kid. Yeah, church kid.
Which makes sense.
I never met him, but he was a really nice guy.
I met him actually.
Yeah, he's a really good
dude.
He
used to do a lot of work with Joe.
Yeah, makes sense. I was working with Joe at the time. Makes sense.
Met him and like just wildly infectious spirit, yeah. Like always, you know, you hear those stories and like, he was such a good guy, and it was literally every cliche that you could think of. Just
he really was a good guy, loving, exactly. He had just done a huge
I think he did like a gospel conference down in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds about right. Yeah,
yeah, like a bunch. I mean, like he, like. His access was like pretty fucking big.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like he was able to get people on the phone.
Yeah, yeah. He wrote Rock My World for Michael.
Like, right.
He had access.
Yeah. So, unfortunate, 41 years old, when he was behind a family. And, you know, just unexpected.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you looking at, you know, I mean, he probably said, I'll talk to you tomorrow. I'll see you later. I'm on my way.
What's the last thing he's thinking? He's not going to be here.
Matt Middleton said at Edward's funeral, and it stuck with me. He said, there is no more arrogant statement than I'll talk to you later.
That's real.
I'll see you later. I think you might say I'll see you later.
Because it ain't guaranteed.
You really don't know. Yeah.
So I just wanted to mention that because he was, he gave a lot to the world, not just the industry, to the world. And I wanted to just, you know, say condolences to him.
And also, I guess we should say we're sending thoughts of healing to Kevin Hart.
Yeah, I was going to bring up Kevin a little later. Okay. So hold on to that one, because you know what? Let's tap into it, because I was actually going to bring up the shop.
Because
I know bro got some things to say. And so do I. So the shop came on this week. It's LeBron James and Maverick Carter's show. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, supposed to be in a barber shop, even though this week it didn't look like, it was like they were in just a room. It wasn't even no barber chairs. Yeah, drinking wine and, you know, the show was getting
redundant,
more bougie. It was all, I mean, these are guys with money. Like, these guys, everybody in the room either has money or definitely has access to like a substantial amount of money. So I don't expect them to go down to like Watts and film it. Although that would be dope, but this, it just feels like it's getting more, it's getting even further kind of removed away from quote unquote.
It's not
culture.
The barbershop.
It's not the barbershop.
It's not the barbershop.
It's not the barbershop.
At all.
It's just like a conversation.
Week, like this week they weren't even
some
in
rich
the
niggas talking. That's what it is.
That's what it is. Rich niggas talking.
Rich niggas talking.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it's rich niggas talking who are getting most of their information now via social media.
Right. So it's barbershop in the sense that, because, I mean, let's be honest, somebody said this on social media, and it's true. The barbershop is important in terms of community, but barbershop conversations are not the highest level of dialogue.
Oh, they're awful.
More times than not, they're fucking awful. Talking. Like, people literally use shop talk as a synonym for talking shit.
Yeah, yeah. You know? The barbershop comes. I assume beauty salon conversations are similar?
Gossipy, stuff like that, yeah.
Gossipy,
like,
yeah. Same, girl, he did
same,
this.
And same shit. Yeah, yeah, same shit.
God bless. But so, anyway, so this week, they had, LeBron actually wasn't there this week. Mm-hmm. So it was Maverick Carter, and I guess it felt like it ended up being kind of co-hosted by Kevin Hart, although I don't know if that they went
that
into
the
it. Right. Yeah, but it kind of felt like it turned into that. So it was Kevin, Charlamagne, Lil Nas X, CJ McCollum, who's plays for the Portland Trailblazers, and am I missing somebody, bro?
Kevin Love wasn't Kevin
Love? Kevin Love. Mm-hmm. Those are the people. And also what happens usually in the shop is, first of all, it's always a half hour, an hour.
I
because usually they switch out people.
I was about to say, that feels like a lot of people.
I've watched Well, yeah, I watched that show one time. Yeah, uh-huh. I thought it was awful from the beginning. And God bless.
Yeah.
I know that they have a production company. Hopefully mm-hmm. there's some, you know,
yeah.
some black folks it, that are working yeah. and getting credits on it.
I think there are.
But the show is not good. It's okay. not entertaining at all.
So usually they switch out people like halfway through. Right. Like they'll be good, and then like three or four people come in and other people right. leave. This time they didn't do that. So the two main topics in this episode were Kevin Love talking and them having like a mental health discussion. Because mm-hmm. Kevin Love is going through like deep depression to the point where like he walked off the court one time
and
left the arena with his shit on.
Right, like
yeah, he just having like some type of breakdown. So he talked a lot about that. Oh, and Gronk, that was the other person. Right. Gronkowski.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, it was. And then Gronkowski, who actually I was actually enjoying his conversation because Gronkowski, you know, he's known as like this party animal right. and blah, but he was kind of being kind of serious. He was yeah. talking about his kind of darkness and his depression and how much pain he was in, and that's why he quit and he really wasn't enjoying himself and he wasn't taking care of his body either. He was like, mm-hmm. yeah, I wasn't doing what I was supposed to do when I was and then they kept trying to like make jokes with him and he kind of was like, I'm kind of being serious here, like I'm not trying to be goofy.
Right.
He talked about like how he has like four older brothers. So he's like, that's how I ended up becoming an athlete because we just played with each other all the right. time and stuff. But anyway, the main thing that kind of lit the internet on fire was Lil Nas X spoke about one of the guys, Manny Diaz, I think his
asked
name
him
is.
Why
I think his
he
name
came
was
out.
Paul Rivera.
Manny Rivera, I think his name is. Well, whatever.
Whatever it was. Yeah.
Asked him about coming out and it was interesting because, you know, you could be taken in a lot of ways, but I felt like there was a kernel of earnestness in whoever Rivera asking him, but I felt like the other guys got way off track, and I felt mm-hmm. like a couple guys almost like Maverick almost spun it as like, did you do that to get more record sales?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why'd you do it right then? Is it because you wanted to, like, boost your audience,
right.
and so, you know, Lil Nas is 19. He's like,
right.
especially compared to A Buster Room, he literally could be A Buster's son.
Yeah,
he's a child. So he's very soft spoken. So like these guys are drinking and talking shit, and you know, Charlamagne, da da da. And he's kind of, so when he finally starts to talk after they kind of talk over him, he says, and I'm totally paraphrasing, basically like. What better time to like let the world know my truth
right.
than now? And like,
and he wanted to control his own narrative.
And I want to control my own narrative. I didn't want anybody to like. I didn't want to blow up and then somebody's like, oh look, I found some right. stuff about him being gay. So right. anyway, I'm paraphrasing. He's right. not exactly what he said, but he's like, yeah. And then Kevin Hart's like, but yeah, but why? Why'd you tell him? Why'd you do that? Why'd you tell him he's gay? And he's like, basically, Kevin Hart was trying to spin it like.
He was like, why do you give a fuck what
why do you care
think?
What people think? Yeah, and Lil Nas is like, fam, like, I've had to, like, deal with a lot of shit
right.
being gay. And
right.
he's like, what? And he's like, fam, if you're from the hood, because Kevin Hart literally had, like, a couple minutes earlier, said something about being from the hood.
Right.
Oh, he talked about how when he would bring his kid, he brought his kids to his old neighborhood, and they're just like, whatever, dad, I don't really give a fuck that you're
right.
up in that building. Like, let's go, you know, let's go to the get some dinner or whatever. So Lil Nas X looks at him and is like, yo, if you're from the hood, like, you know what I'm talking about. Like,
right.
why are you even
and he
questioning?
Tried, and Kevin tried to play like he didn't know what he was talking
about. Yeah, like, or like, why, yeah, like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, almost like the homophobia that exists everywhere, mm-hmm. but definitely in the hood. Like, he was almost like downplaying it. It was real
right.
weird. And I could see Lil Nas X was definitely thrown like,
what are you talking about?
Damn, fam, really? You know, and he kind of shut down after that. He didn't really talk much more the rest of the show after that. But he did stick up for himself. He didn't get punked, but he was just kind of like, I ain't talking to these niggas no more. That's kind of the vibe
I got.
And I
can't blame him.
Yeah, go ahead, bro.
Yeah, I don't think that there was a bit of earnest in that comment.
No.
I think that was...
I can't clown you about this, so don't talk
let me,
about
let
it
me,
so I can just be quiet.
You know what? I'll be careful in saying this, but having had some experience with understanding how production works,
mm-hmm.
that they knew that was the fuse.
That was the lightning rod.
That was the fuse. Because you knew the Kevin Hart's tweets
yeah.
and his
yeah.
situation.
And what happened.
So you knew that the potential of this going left.
Even with Charlamagne, it was yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. right? So Okay, I don't think it was earnest, one. And two, I don't really know why you would feel the need or why you would think that you were entitled to ask someone why did they decide they wanted to tell
to come out
their right. truth.
And right. when.
About
and when
themselves. They wanted to do yeah, it. And when they wanted to do it. Like, yeah. the fact that that's even a question
yeah.
is a problem for me.
Are that Barbershop seen as a no. marketing ploy? Like, that was my thing. Like, how dare you ask a kid or once they, or even if you ask him, like Sean said, it's distasteful to even ask him, like, why'd you come out? Why'd you express this part of your identity? Because that's really what it is, right? Yeah. People were trying to downplay it on Twitter who were defending Kevin, like, why you need to let anybody else know about your sex life? And I'm like, all niggas do in the barbershop is talk about bitches. Like, and so you want to be like, who cares who you love? When literally, if we're talking about barbershop talk, like, that's all y'all do. And also, Kevin being like, who cares what other people think? Like, my man, you did a public apology to your wife on Instagram. You know what I'm saying? Like, you ain't the one. Like, and all of this happened this year. Like, you ain't that one. You know
Kevin's,
what I mean?
Kevin's has 15 years of comedy in which his family and, you know, like, that's at the center.
Yeah.
Him being heterosexual, right, mm-hmm. is at the center of that. And I'm not even saying that as a slight to him.
Right. I don't think it's the only true. One.
But his comedy is also, let me talk about my shortness and my this and my that before you can talk about it.
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. yes, yes. And that's whatever, right? But, mm-hmm. like, the fact that they would, and you can tell when a tone is someone legitimately trying to understand.
Yeah.
And
versus one, I don't want
to
talk about
and
it.
And like, one, I don't think it's very hard to understand, but right. but okay, we'll give you the benefit of the doubt and say, mm-hmm. maybe he's asking in earnest, but the tone in which you're asking is, one, I thought it was a little aggressive.
Yeah.
And I thought that what they did was basically try to make this kid feel, first of all, I would have to imagine, and I'm only talking shit here, I would have to imagine that kid felt alone. He yes. looked a little like a deer.
No, he definitely felt alone.
He looked a little like a deer in the headlights because I would probably guess that this might not have been on the docket of what the conversations was supposed to be okay. about. Mm. So it might have thrown him for a loop for that.
True.
It might have thrown him for a loop for a number of things.
Also, hold your thought. Also, he definitely felt alone because you could tell everybody in that room has had interaction at some point. Like,
right.
Kevin and Charlamagne are very close. Obviously, Maverick knows all of them.
Right.
Maverick knows C.J. McCollum from the NBA. Right. Blah, blah, blah.
He's and, the you
know, outside. They don't know nobody in that room.
And Kevin it's a sports and entertainment room, and it's also a very, the whole premise of the shop is a very heteronormative, like, premise, right? It's man shit, right? And so it might have been on the docket because he's had no hesitancy about talking about it, but he might not have expected like that kind of aggression from Kevin. And it felt to me like saying, all right, if you want to be gay, but why do we have to talk about it?
Yes.
That's what it felt like to me.
No, that's what it was.
Why do we have to talk about it? Just be gay over there.
That's what it was. And then he goes into like this fucking diatribe of, it's just you, and then you be you, and then you ain't got to be nobody else but you.
And then you.
And niggas was trying to make it seem like
he said something deep.
Like, he dropped a jewel.
Like, yo, I'm bugging.
Yeah.
And, yo, dude, there, just in recent memory,
right.
There's the no homo
and pause.
Theory. All of that shit that we went to.
I'm also old enough to remember the gay rapper.
And on top of that, to pretend like, so what happens is that for a lot of men, because if you don't present in a very particularly gay way.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, right?
If it is not ultra feminine, if it's not an easily assumed thing,
mm-hmm.
right? The conversations are usually based
on assuming you're
a heterosexual male.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So that kid at 19, you're not going to tell me, because he doesn't present as such,
no.
right.
you're not going to tell me that he ain't been in the room where he's heard what you niggas
right.
have said
right.
about gay people. That's why.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that I think what's missing in all of this conversation when people are like, what's, why should he have to come out? And I'm like, why does it matter that he came out? Like, if you're saying it's not a big enough deal for him to come out, it's not a big enough deal for you to care that he came out.
Yeah.
Like, we want to get to a point eventually where people saying that they're gay is not an event. Yeah, and if people can't do that, if you can't normalize it,
you can't let, like, the nigga just live his life. He ain't bothering nobody.
That's why, to me, growth would have been that not being a topic of conversation in that setting.
Right.
That setting with him just sort of jumping in from the entertainment standpoint and being one of the voices in the room.
How's it feel to
be in that room? Also, he was just too, to y'all's point, he's too young to be in that room.
But he is too young to be in that room. And again, that is a part of, that's a production thing, right? Is that you need to have, you know, you need to have certain people that move the needle.
Right. Yeah.
And so, I get that. But, like, you might have wanted to have another kid that was maybe under 25. Right. Someone that was...
that you could kind of connect with.
You know, Matt, Kevin's 40.
Yeah.
Charlamagne's 40.
Yeah. More than 40, actually. You know what I'm saying? Like,
And so, you know, look, man, I think that they thought they were doing something. It didn't quite go as planned.
It definitely
did not curl all the way over.
Right.
And, you know, look, I don't necessarily know that they were being...
Nefarious?
Yes, I think they were being ignorant.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily know that they were trying to be mean. Yes.
Yeah.
They were oblivious to what they were doing, and I thought it was a little insulting. I thought it was a lot insulting for Kevin to pretend that he couldn't understand what this kid was saying, and more so than him being gay, right? I feel like, as the man in the room, when I am amongst 20-year-old kids, like, I just feel like it's our job to sort of guide and lead.
Yes.
And for you to just fucking talk over him
and give
him this, like to be this hovering presence over him, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't cool at all, man. I didn't like it.
I didn't like it either. Like I said, I don't know Lil Nas X, but every time I've seen him, I mentioned him on the show when he first blew up. Like, I like this kid.
And for the record, to Maverick, his record was the biggest record in the fucking country. Already, my nigga.
Exactly.
Let's be clear on that.
He didn't do this for that. And I don't know why y'all think that just somebody coming out means that they gonna go from, you know, 50,000 streams to 50 million streams.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know how y'all think this works.
Right.
Yeah. So,
they think there's a gay agenda, so.
They do. Spinning into that is Kevin Hart this week had this terrible car accident.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like everything's still very vague.
Which is very sketchy.
Well,
first, like, I hope he does.
I hope he's okay. He apparently had three terrible back injury.
He had like a 9-hour back surgery already.
Yeah, three portions of his spine or something
that sounds scary as shit.
And they said, so the most clarity they've given is that he's supposed to leave the hospital this week, but he has months of rehab at him.
I bet.
And he's in a lot of pain. That says nothing about, like, his mobility or that might be on purpose, or they might still be waiting to see. I don't know, but I just feel like all the details have been very vague. But I will also
say, not merely lining up.
Yeah, not really. Like, it's like, he, like, one report said that he, like, literally, like, walked away from the crash to go get help. And I'm like, how you gotta get a back injury, but you walked away from the crash?
Because
the other two passengers were apparently pinned in the car.
Yeah.
He left. He went to his house.
And then they called the ambulance, several hours later to come get him. It's all just very...
Yeah.
So they're saying that the crash occurred at, like, 12:45.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, from some reports, that his bodyguards took him to his house.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, I believe the ambulance was called at, like, maybe like 2:30.
You're like 2 in the morning,
but,
like, something like that.
The ambulance wasn't called for the two people that were pinned in the car.
Well, there was one other person that was pinned in the car. Again, they do not specify
right
that the if the bodyguards had also taken them.
Right. Because somebody was airlifted somewhere, and if you waited hours for somebody to need to be airlifted
But that's the thing. That's where it gets tricky, right? Because I've never seen anything that said someone was airlifted.
I saw something that the driver was airlifted.
That's the other thing. So there was also a 911 report that basically says that the person is reporting that Kevin was in the driver's seat. Yeah. Which,
see, that's what I feel like.
So they gave time to switch.
A good point was made, which is, I saw a picture of the car. First, the car was beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's his car.
It's a 1970 Plymouth Barracuda. If you guys don't, and I'm not a car horse like that, but this is definitely like a classic American muscle car.
But Kevin ain't going to be letting nobody drive that shit.
No, that car is... Dude, you can get a shit version of that car, and it'll cost you anywhere between $95,000 to $100,000.
That's what I'm saying.
A pristine. There was one.
And his shit was crispy.
Dude, there was one that went for $4 million.
Wow.
Like, this is not.
It's not a joke.
It's not a joke.
Yeah.
So his car might have easily been $200,000.
Yeah, so he ain't gonna be like, yo, just drive my shit. Nah, bro.
At all. And
what's interesting is that the guy. I mean, I don't know the relationship. They could be friends for all I know. But from what I read in one of the reports, the passenger who's pinned in the back seat is his wife's trainer.
Yeah.
A woman. Mm. The guy who by reports was in the driver's boat is her fiance.
Yeah.
And Kevin was in the passenger seat. So I don't know what he was going on or what he was doing.
Yeah.
Beside the point.
Yeah.
But it's also still like that time, to your point, and I mean, honestly, trying to figure this out is separate from Kevin's health. I just want to go on record and say that, right? But the shit is weird.
Yeah.
It's very weird, and it's very like, if you are this serious, how is this timeline
It sounds to me, and allegedly, this is all allegedly, because I ain't got no bread for y'all to be coming for. It sounds to me like they went out, and there was a bodyguard tailing them.
Yeah.
I mean, if they just went to the fucking 7-Eleven, there's really no need for a detail.
Yeah.
And I'm sure where Kevin Hart lives, he's perfectly fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? So if he had a detail, that means they probably went out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you take your shit out for a spin on the town.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That lapse in time leads me to believe that there may have been something involved that they wanted to wear off.
Yeah.
Or something,
And when they figured that they were going to be okay,
then they called the ambulance.
They realized that, oh shit, you know, we really do need help. Now, this woman she hasn't gotten any medical attention, which I think is very dangerous.
Right.
You know, to
but that level survive. Of percent,
yes.
Yeah.
Like that, you go to the
just
fucking
get a
hospital.
Checkout.
Just
yeah.
go, let them run a scan.
But again, like you said, who knows what they're trying to, like, see if someone's going to push out the system.
And again, I hope that they all are fine. You know, there's no ill will towards anything like that.
But it's just a weird situation.
It's a weird situation.
Very weird. And they haven't done a great job at managing this.
Yeah. And I will say, like, when it first came out, somebody said, I know there's a lot of people making jokes about it. I don't necessarily support making jokes about it. But at the same time, there was like this outpouring for Kevin. And somebody tweeted, like, can y'all please stop acting like Kevin passed away? And I was just like, you know, it was like, it was just so many, like, thoughts and prayers. Can we just pray? So. And I get it. But and that was before we even knew how serious
what
it
happened,
was.
What happened,
It was just like he was in a serious car accident. And so people just, I don't know.
I mean, I think a lot of people, too, I mean, you know, not to liken it, but, like, I think a lot of people, you know, the most recent devastating car accident was probably Paul Walker.
True.
So I think people just connect.
True.
And that, you know what I'm saying? And they just, you know, so I think people were really kind of shaken, especially when you started to see the pictures of the car.
Yeah.
Because the car is absolutely
wrecked.
Total.
The car is wrecked. Yeah. So we'll, you know, we'll keep an eye on it and see what happens. My Oakland Raiders, man. So Antonio Brown, as of now, Antonio Brown is a wide receiver, top five. Wide receiver in the league. Mm-hmm. Some people say the best. It's arguable, but whatever. He was traded to the Raiders this year because he did a whole bunch of fuck shit at his former team, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, yesterday, he almost had a fight with the general manager of the Raiders. They had a big press conference today. None's come out as of yet as to what they're going to do, but they're going to at least suspend him. They're talking about trying to avoid his whole contract and like just let him go. My Raiders can't get out their own way, man. So just pray for me, y'all, with my with my terrible team.
Jesus ain't thinking about them goddamn Raiders.
No, but shit, Jesus, just give us 2 seconds of attention. This is brutal. I want to mention 2 quick little documentaries I saw. I saw this documentary on the Nazis about a week ago. It's on the History Channel. I can't remember the exact title, but it's about how the Nazis, and now I get why where Stan Lee was got a lot of the Captain America shit from.
Okay.
Because the Nazis were like, they were drugging up the soldiers on meth and Oxycontin and amphetamines. So they basically were making super soldiers. And so that's why they were able to do all these blitzes all throughout Europe, because their soldiers wouldn't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And they would, you know, just could kill, like, and just fight stronger than anybody else. So, and then it talked about how later on Hitler was a straight up drug addict.
Oh.
Like, straight up. He had a doctor who was injecting him every day with cocaine,
Jesus Christ,
Oxycontin, methamphetamine, all kind of shit. Like, every day he was getting shots. Every day. Jesus. Like, and if you watch some shots, some old footage now, like, even at the Olympics, and he's rocking.
Nodding.
He's rocking the whole time. He can't sit still. Like, Hitler was a junkie. He's a fucking junkie. But and I was like, oh, that's why, I bet that's kind of where they did the research in the, when they did Captain America, like how they had like the super soldiers and how the Nazis were so strong and Bucky and all that. Like, I bet they got that from that kind of research. This is very interesting. And the Americans started drugging up their soldiers too.
Oh,
up until, I think, the end of World War II. They were feeding them amphetamines because they were like, yo, we only way you can fight these dudes is by doing the same shit.
Pilots. I knew there used to be a habit of giving amphetamines to pilots.
Yeah. Now it was the whole army. The whole armed forces were taking mad drugs. So they were like, that's the only way we could fight these dudes, just kind of fight on their level.
Right.
It was just really interesting. And the other documentary I watched was the Harvey Weinstein documentary.
I haven't watched it yet.
Have
you guys watched, I don't want to get you off of that. Have you guys watched the Hitsville doc yet?
Oh, yeah. Okay, we talked about it last week. You were here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Hitsville, go ahead, Harvey.
The Hitsville doc is
which, by the way, let me just say it again. I know our listeners aren't these people, but for everybody who keeps wanting to say, where's the Harvey Weinstein doc? It's out, motherfuckers.
It's on Hulu. That's what it is, because it's on Hulu and not on Netflix. So people think it's out.
But it's
Harvey, I mean,
dude. He's fucking disgusting.
Dude, he was raping everybody.
And the stories have been out there forever.
Like Roseanne Arquette, and like, there's some people like you, there's some actresses you won't know in the doc, but there's a couple, like Rosanna Arquette, is like, oh, yeah, I've seen her before, like, and, you know, others that, you know, like, Naomi Judd and all this show, like, he was raping everybody.
Right. He's an awful, gluttonous, disgusting man.
Absolutely.
He is, like, the stereotype of a, like, short,
he's not that
fat,
short,
loud, aggressive, like, movie studio titan that they put in all the movies. Like, he is that dude.
There's an image that is so telling, right? So it's him, his brother, and like this other guy, and they're at like one of the film festivals, and they're in black tie, right? Like, so the men are dressed and they're shaven, and Harvey is no haircut.
He still looks disheveled.
He's scruffy. His shirt collar is all over the place.
He always
his
looks
tie disheveled. His stomach hanging out.
He looks fucking disgusting. Repulsive. Like, he looks disgusting, dude.
He looks like the type of dude probably wasn't really washing regularly.
Mm. Oh,
he probably smelled.
He absolutely went days without washing his ass.
They showed a part. This is a little clip. He was walking down the street going into a building
in the black shirt.
Yeah, yo, the dude's jeans is dragging the ground and like torn, like from walking on him. Like, this dude, like.
Yeah.
He didn't give a fuck. Obviously, he made a lot of money.
Yeah.
His movies were like huge successful.
He would probably be out late, like drunk, fucked up, get to bed, just get up, throw some shit on, go to work.
Yeah. Like, he had one of his assistants was in the joint. She was like, yo, like, I would come wait to do it up. And he would like get up and be butt naked around me. She'd be like, yo, fam. And he's like, yo, shut the fuck up. You don't have time to worry about your fucking feelings. Like, people say he would like throw ashtrays. Like, he was.
I believe all
I'm just curious as to why. why nobody ever choked him out. Like, I'm not even saying that flippantly. Like, I'm just saying he seems like the kind of guy that would have gotten at least one person. Like, and there's probably a story out there that we just haven't heard of. Him.
Yeah.
Somebody absolutely would have upside his fucking head.
Because he's wild disrespectful to everybody.
Well, I think that's part of it, right? He's so disrespectful to everybody. And, you know, in entertainment, because even in music, I think about this. Like, I promise you that when women were about to go work for him, they were given, like, some primers. Like, Harvey acts like this. He'll do this. Just ignore. And you were just supposed to eat it.
Yeah.
Like, I've worked for some fucking crazy
bosses.
Yeah,
no. That's what one of the ladies said. You're supposed to just eat it. Because it was a small... You know, Miramax was a very small company. Right. It wasn't a lot. It was a few of them. So, like, you said they just ate the shit.
It's like their thing. Like, I think about, like... Because I've worked under Puffy. I worked on... You know what I mean? And all of them, like, you might flip a table. Niggas might slam a door.
Yeah.
Motherfuckers might... But it's just, like, it's regarded as something that is... Not so much okay behavior, but expected,
but
it's part of it.
But that is also
behavior from that culture.
But that is
right?
also that has also evolved,
right?
In that, as those executives and those sorts of people, even in music, and even with the shit that comes with being in music,
right.
What they realized was that as those checks got bigger,
they had more to lose.
They had not just that they had more to lose, but they could no longer just operate in this little cove, right? Like, you could no longer be in this sort of insulated bubble, okay? Right. The internet, social media, being able to be taped on a phone, all of that shit has changed.
Right.
Kids are now come. You know, you get a 22-year-old motherfucker coming in, they know about the 40-hour work week. You ain't gassing them with no overtime
with no
for free. And like, they know their rights, okay? They sitting down with HR, and they're like, yo, he did X, Y, and Z. I want this on the record.
The new, that's how L.A. got, because the new crop, they don't do that shit.
Yeah,
they
not with
hi,
that.
HR.
Yes.
I feel uncomfortable.
Yes. Yes.
Like, in a minute.
Yeah,
in
so
a minute.
It was it's just a trip to see. Like, and I didn't know. He started off in concert promoting. I didn't know that.
Well,
I guess he went to Buffalo State or something like that.
It totally makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
It makes perfect sense. Now, I will say one of the things that I think that led to people taking the abuse and the things that came with Harvey in that company was that he was one of the rare bosses, and seems to be kind of universal, that if you had a really good idea,
you could rock
he
out.
He was fucking with you.
Yeah, right. And they had the door open policy. So
yes.
Like, one of the
so
women says, because I think one of the women had an idea, they made the movie.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, said, like, go you could walk in out. And be like, yo, I want to do this. And they'd be like, all right, fuck
well, yeah,
because
for a long time, Miramax was the one that was getting behind, like, the smaller niche.
Yeah.
Kind of cool films, right? Yeah.
So it was. It's. I mean, it's interesting watch. It's, you know, it's a hard watch, but it's interesting watch. To see. Also wanted to mention. Just real quick, Wu-Tang series is on Hulu too.
The first three episodes.
The first three episodes. I'm one and a half in.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it. The dude is divine. Got divine down pat.
Davies
is pretty good as meth. But
Davies, T.J. Holmes, who's playing ODB, is really good.
Okay.
Like, you look at him and he's ODB, and the guy who's playing Ghost, even though he doesn't feel like Ghost,
it's Ghost's energy.
It's Ghost's energy. I think what's most... So, for anybody who's thinking this is about to be, like, a scripted version of Mics and Men, it's not.
No.
This is, like, a true origin story. This is not about how Wu got big. This is about, like, what made all of these guys. Because it's really about... It's really about the drug dealing and the... It's, like, about Divine's organization and the warring factions between Park Hill
and
Stapleton and all of that other stuff.
Well, I know my man Sean Kane, peace to him, he did a lot of consulting on the film, and he told me, like, this is only, like, you know, this is only one season.
Yes,
so, like, we're not, it ain't, like, don't think by end of the season it's going to be, like, you know, fucking...
The Triumph album.
No, no. They're leading up to this thing leads up kind of like to
I
them,
think it probably leads
to
up
them
to
getting
36
the deal.
Chambers. Yeah.
Yeah, to them getting the deal.
Right.
And then, you know, next season, then you go into the music shit.
I'm on episode 3, and they still haven't formed the group.
I finished episode three,
they still haven't formed the group yet. So, I mean, but I think the reason RZA named it an American Saga is because what it really is about is, to me, it's about the connection between the crack epidemic and the rap game.
Yes.
And how that is what brought them together, and that's what they pulled from, right, for their talents. And it's really about New York in that era.
Yeah.
And it's so spot on.
Yeah.
Like, the feel, the looks, like...
What they're wearing.
What they're wearing, the dialogue, like, it's so spot. Like, it's a whole bunch of 5% bullshit.
Yeah.
And it's, like, Israelites in front of the Twin Towers.
Yeah.
And, like, it's a whole bunch of polo and bamboo Tommy earrings. And a Nefertiti necklace. I had one of those.
I had no idea that Ghost and RZA's sister used to get down. Like,
wonder if that part's true, because... So, RZA has said... It's mostly true, but some things are dramatized. Okay. Like, it's not a complete redoing, but some things are dramatized. And that he changed some timelines a little bit the sake of story. For example, Meth, very early on, is in... So, the first thing that I think is interesting is that when they introduce you to everybody, they don't tell you who everybody's going to become. So, like, if you don't know... Actually, even if you knew everybody's real names, because
at first I was like, oh, that's supposed to be Ray.
Yeah, Kwan? So Ray used to go by Raekwon.
Mm-hmm.
But Raekwon's real name is not Sha. So right, so even if you're trying to, even if you know their governments, you're not necessarily going to catch it. Like ODB is going by Ihsahn.
Yeah,
which is not his government. That was one of his early.
It's 5% of name.
Right. Mm-hmm. So. But I love that they don't give you, like, a Chiron.
Yeah, like,
to tell you who it's going to be. Bastard. You got to figure it out. And I don't want to spoil anything, but I did not realize that Ray and Ghost started as, like, basically trying to kill each other.
Yeah, hate each
You know
other.
What I mean? So it opens, you basically meet them where they are, and you might have to go Google some shit, or you just got to keep watching. Mm-hmm. Like, Meth is obvious because Dave East looks like Meth.
Yeah.
ODB is obvious. Riz is obvious only because you know he's Bobby D, and he's the center story, and he's playing with the beats and stuff. But it took me a minute to figure out who Ray was. Devon's obviously. Yeah. He's Devon. It took me a minute to figure out who Ray was. Ghost I knew because he was with his brothers and because I knew his name. But it took me, I had to go to Google. Jizza shows up in a couple of episodes, and I was like, who the fuck is that? And, like, I had to go look, you know what I mean? So it's like,
they show Ghost with his brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was,
he said, he talks about how he used to
take care of his brothers.
Brothers, you know what I'm saying? Like, for real. So, you got to see the,
I watched that. I watched the first episode. Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
I think it's really well done. Obviously, Robinson is a genius. Chris Robinson is a genius.
Yeah.
And Riz is an executive producer, but Meth's a producer.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're involved to a certain extent. So I was looking at some of the reviews, and I saw this review from this white dude. Of course, white dude. But even though I'm not going to say that, because some white critic wrote really good reviews, but he was complaining that it was like a third-rate copy of The Wire. And I was like, do you not understand that this is really... This is really what happened. Like, you could write 10 stories that look just like this because that's what the fuck was happening. Yeah, it's not a copy. That's literally what it was. Right. That's literally what it was. And he was mad that it wasn't about the music.
But what's crazy to me is that that's also such a narrowed view. Like, it's also a shot at The Wire, not for nothing. It's actually, I'm going to just say it, like, it's a very white thing.
Yeah.
Right? Because poor black people is this blanket, right?
Yeah.
Over this. And there's no real sort of understanding of nuance.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, there's no real looking at family dynamics. Mm-hmm. And saying,
right.
Oh, shit. Like, this isn't exactly like that. Like,
right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's... Like, Divine is not Omar.
Not at all.
Right? Like, he's not...
And RZA, Divine, and their brothers and sisters, they show that they're pretty close family.
Their family unit is, like, solid.
Like, for real.
And shout out to Erica Alexander, by the way. Erica Alexander is killing it.
Yes.
Yeah. She's killing it.
And it was just really... And that's what I'm saying. Like, giving...
Like, you're calling it that because there's drugs involved. Like, that's literally...
Yeah. That's the only thing.
That's literally the only thing.
And that's what bothers me. Right? Like, is that there's no... There's... Like, dude, like, just watch it.
Yeah.
Take it in for what it is. Like, you didn't, you know, and I get it, man. You guys have advanced time to get these sorts of things.
Right.
And I get you wanting to get it out. And yes, it would seem, you know, fairly boring and myopic to you because this isn't something that you're connecting the dots with because you've seen the finished product.
Yeah.
Right.
Right? And so that's why you don't really want to see this bullshit.
Yeah, like, even get to the rapping.
Even though this is this is the foundation.
Yeah. But also, this is the purpose of the series, right? Like, the fact that he was, that this guy was complaining that there wasn't more of the Woo music and there wasn't, because it's not about,
there was no Woo
it's
music.
Not about the Woo, it's not about them as rappers, it is about the place that made them.
And also, I love, like, it's like subtle shit, like they were showing how RZA came up with the sound.
Yeah.
Yes. Like he had he always has the anime playing on the TV.
Right.
And he's like fucking around and trying to figure things.
Trying to
figure out a sound. Like he's working on a sound. Right. Every day he's working. I remember when I did the Ghost album and shit, and me and RZA were talking, he was like, yo, I do like 10 or 15 beats every day. And by this point, they were flying.
Right.
Yeah. He's like, I do 10 or 15 beats every day. Literally, just because to keep the shit going.
My only complaint about it so far, and again, I've seen all three episodes that are up right now, is that I understand why RZA is centered, but he's centered almost to a fault. Like there's flashbacks and there's like little messages
when he was
dropped.
A kid,
like
and all
in,
that.
I can't remember. I think this was the first episode, like when they go to see Meth to do the.
Statue of Liberty.
And then he's playing, like, why do you know, like, y'all are by World Trade, why do you know the black guy who plays chess in the park at the World Trade Center when you're from Staten Island? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's like, Bobby, and then he's like, well, if you're not the drug dealer cat, like, who are you? I'm like, message, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, some of it's a little
A little heavy-handed.
Some of it's a little heavy-handed. I don't mind it too much, but that's, like, my biggest gripe was
the silliest, smallest gripe,
right.
Which is,
that I don't think people appreciate how physically big these dudes are.
That too.
Right.
Like they're not, like, these niggas are not 5'6", 140 pounds. Like, these niggas is like 6'3",
yep. Yeah, Meth 6'2". Is like 6'4".
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. Ghost, them, like, these are big niggas that was letting them hammers go in the street.
Exactly.
Like, these were not, you know.
Little guys, you know what I mean?
Exactly. So I think that, and I also think that that kind of becomes a part of your character.
Of course.
The same, in the same way, Omar's small stature was a part of his character,
Like, he was small.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's funny, because, like, rap niggas used to be big.
Nigga.
Like, LLMD?
Now they little.
LLMD, like,
nigga, I've never seen LL with a bodyguard that was bigger than him.
Ever. That's what I'm saying. Niggas are huge. Just Ice. Like, KRS-One. These niggas are
KRS-One. KRS-One's a smooth 6'4".
Easy. These are big dudes, man. You know what I'm saying? Now, niggas
even
like
Biz is huge.
Biggie. Was a big guy. 6'3", like a big ass nigga. You know, nice dude is like 5'5", a buck 10.
I ain't seen a rap over 5'9" in years. You know what I'm saying?
Right. 50
maybe
might have been the last
one. Maybe 50. And Lil Nas X, he's skinny though, but he's, you know, he's like 6'5" almost.
Yeah, but 50 might have been the last, like, big nigga.
He's super tall, but he's like a rail. Gotta lighten it up a little bit. We gotta mention Irvin Magic Johnson's
EC60 has been,
man.
Yo, it's been.
Yeah, go to that. If you haven't gone to that hashtag.
The hashtag is EC60 because Cookie.
That shit calling me poor.
Yeah, because Cookie also poor.
Not to cut you off.
She did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's why it's EC.
Yeah.
I was wondering. Look, there's a lot of money in the room, right?
Right.
It's because it's coming from multiple places. Like, Magic knows. Obviously, sports people with some bread. He knows
Wilbon talked about that today.
Yeah, I heard he has Titans of industry with, like, dumb money, right? So he's got, you know, but then he got, you know, niggas he grew up with.
Yeah.
I'm like, did they pay for some of these niggas to come up? And he can't afford it. Hey, bro, get on the plane.
They might have sent a jet for some people.
I'm 100% positive them niggas chartered the plane.
And they covered the rooms.
And they might have even did that. They just did a buyout.
Okay.
Or they might have just did the plane and said, yo, we're going to get y'all down here.
And figure the rest
out. Y'all take care of the hotel. You ain't got to pay for no food.
Right.
You ain't paying. You literally ain't paying for nothing.
For nothing.
So they took over.
It's probably a block. I saw a block of rooms.
Yeah.
So they working it out. Like, hey.
Oh, I saw some pictures. Them was definitely some old Midwest niggas.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Magic.
I love it.
Definitely still fuck with the same old
niggas from Detroit and Grand Rapids.
But what I also love is that even the Hollywood blacks that were out there were like, auntie and uncle. Like, Cedric the Entertainer was out there two-stepping.
It was grown
folk. That's what Wilbon said. There was no
pretense.
There was no, like, 25-year-old.
Yeah.
He was like that. He was like...
Everybody was over 40.
Yeah, he was like, that was a mature... He said that was a us party.
Yes.
That wasn't for no...
The young people were Magic's kids.
Yeah. It wasn't let me stunt. Like, they were stunting, but they were taking pictures where it's like the women in the front and the husbands in the back. Like, the old nigga pictures. The old nigga, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And it wasn't none of this shit. Like,
they just partying.
It wasn't no outfit of the day. The youngest person there might have been Angela. Aside from Magic,
the kid, yeah, she probably was. Yeah. Yeah, so like Earth and Fire performed. I think Earth and Fire, Shaka Wilson too, right?
Of course,
Earth and Fire, Shaka.
Yeah, peace to Shaka.
Still looking good. Dougie was on the mic all night. I couldn't figure out who was DJing.
But wait, I'm missing somebody. It wasn't Freddie. If I had Freddie Jackson,
it was Freddie Jackson, right?
Was some R&B nigga who
Eric Benet.
No, but aside from Airbnb, an old school dude. The OJs were there.
But
I've
been around a few really famous people.
Right.
I've never seen anybody more comfortable with being as famous as Magic. Magic. Yeah. Like that, like
he
Magic
seems so normal.
Yo, he used to do this Midsummer Night thing.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Yo, so I'm in a section with Magic like and I'm kind of like, not starstruck,
but just like, this
but like
Magic.
Nigga, I'm really like sitting here kicking it with Magic a little bit. Like, nigga, that's Magic.
It's Magic Johnson.
And yo, his glow, and that's another thing that Wilbon said, like he doesn't, and like people come to him, they flock to him. So it's not like he
got
to call people and try to get them to come to his party. He was like, when you know, it's Irv, like you coming through,
I'm turning 60.
Yeah,
right. We're gonna go over here. You know, the first one I saw also was Kevin Lyles, he was the first.
So here's the thing, there was two rounds of it because Magic and Cookie have been in Italy for like 3 weeks.
I think he
like
does
that
every year.
So they do it every year. So like Kevin and Erica and what's his name? Frank Cooper and his wife and a couple of other couples were there early.
With that.
Left. Okay. Came back actual birthday, because his actual birthday was last week. So the birthday festive. So some people were with him on vacation.
And then they did the best
left came home,
shit.
Came back for the birthday shit. And like Holly Robinson had been with
Pete had
been with them before. And then came back, and then more people. So, you know, it was like Star Jones, and obviously it was Miss Tina.
Yeah, Miss Tina and
Richard.
Richard.
And all of them.
Old nigga Richard. That nigga with his hat on, sitting there. I ain't dancing with these niggas.
And it was Glenn Turman.
Yeah, Glenn Turman.
It was just every old nigga.
All of old niggas that used to keep their keys on their pinky back in the day.
And who carried MCM bags?
Yeah, the MCM bags.
Man purse. Yeah, them niggas. Kevin had his. Now, here was what was the funniest thing to me. Kevin and Erica's youngest daughter started her first day of kindergarten yesterday, and them niggas posted her on the ground like, have a great first day of school.
Oh, yeah.
I was you going to school again next year.
Yeah.
This shit is only happening.
Yeah, you know, it was the
Saint-Tropez has never seen, because that wasn't no puffy shit. Puffy shit be like some high
actors.
Saint-Tropez ain't never seen niggas being nigger-ish. Like at Nikki Beach, at the Citadel, they took
them niggas was asking for hot sauce. Them niggas was like, "Hang on, no Louisiana, ain't no crystals,
and some vinegar, and some vinegar."
Nah, that should look great. I mean, J Lo and EJ, several people posted the pictures of them doing the dance off to Square Biz. That's when I was like, okay, who's DJing?
Right,
because they're playing Square Biz. Like that's not some normal shit.
It was definitely somebody we know.
Absolutely. But
it might have been D Nice.
It might have been Derek. I don't know. I haven't looked at Derek's brand.
Hasn't posted,
it looked like it was just like one of the few times, very, very few times, where I was like, I wish I was there.
I was
like,
following
most times,
that shit.
Like, that party's cool, but like, that's a few times looking at the grandma, like,
I've been following that shit. I've been following their whole vacation. But I've been following that shit since people started coming back. Like, we in the group chat, like, such and such just got there. Like, Angela just got there. Like,
that was a Puffy party meets Essence meets Tom Joyner.
Exactly. Yes. Tom Joyner, word, exactly.
Yes.
Like, all that shit
all
just
that
married
all one. All
for,
that
for
shit
for, like,
one.
5 days.
Yeah, and it looked like it was a great time. And, you know, happy birthday to Magic and Cookie.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been together since...
College.
Yeah. So that's 78, 79. Yeah, Magic left college in 79. Yeah, 79.
So 40 years, wow.
40 years, bro. Wow. 40 joints.
And they chilling.
And they look good, man.
They look great.
Yeah, Magic had Nikki Beach in basketball shorts and a Nike shirt. Like, you can't, I love it.
Slide, they got slides.
And slides on! Bruh!
Yeah, nah, it looked
oh, awesome. LL and Simone were out there.
Yeah, oh, I didn't see them.
They were on the big ass boat.
Vacation early.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they came.
Like Jimmy Kimmel and a whole bunch of other folks.
It was so many. Yeah,
I knew it was real because, you know.
Only person I didn't see was Denzel and Paulo.
Peace to Mike Kaiser because Kaiser posted. It was the best time I ever had in my life. Kaiser never writes stuff like that.
Right,
like, he doesn't... He's the, like, he's not impressed guy. Yeah. I've been
he's really not, though.
He's really not, because he really has been everywhere. And he knows everybody. So for him to write that...
Yeah, now I'm...
He was like, it's the best time I've ever had in my life. I was like, oh, wow, okay, this shit was bonkers.
Right.
Yeah, so, yeah. God bless, man. Yeah. Peace to Magic. Last thing I wanted to mention, man, was this weird story I saw about this kid who... It's weird. He's been doing a diet of Pringles, white bread,
and
French fries. And
he went blind.
I'm laughing at this nigga.
How old was he?
He was like 18 or 19
years old. I want to know where his parents are.
Who was your mom? He said he first visited the doctor at 14, complaining of tiredness, and according to, you know, some published reports, he was feeling sick, but he wouldn't take any medication.
Mm-hmm.
And he just had a normal BMI, height, or whatever. So he didn't get fat. He just basically his whole shit was fucked up. His vitamin deficiencies were fucked up.
Yeah, of course. I mean,
I'm saying, where was his?
Yeah, mom. Like, come on, man. They put lettuce and tomatoes on a fucking hamburger.
Exactly.
Right. Like, you ain't get, like,
nigga had a piece of fruit in years.
That's crazy, man.
So, I mean, bro, what'd you think was going
to
happen?
Peace to you.
Yeah.
Peace to you.
God bless.
We're going to wrap it up on that note.
Yep.
We're going to head back into the world. But we'll be here now. I don't think I'm going to be doing any traveling for at least the next couple of weeks. So we should be able to knock out a bunch of shows.
Yeah. Yep.
And we'll see y'all next week.
Peace. Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast. Talk to you next week.